From Illinois Public Media, this is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're about 1 month since the end of the longest government shutdown in American history. You might recall that the main reason the shutdown happened in the first place was a fight over whether or not to extend enhanced tax credits for the Affordable Care Act. These were added during the pandemic, but with an expiration date this year. And that will significantly raise the price of health insurance, not just for people who get coverage through the ACA, but it's also expected to affect those on employer-based plans as well. The shutdown ended without a resolution of this issue, so like a lot of things in the Congress, it's coming down to last-minute negotiations and partisan back and forth.
The Unaffordable Care Act, the president's exactly right. It has been a disaster. We've seen 150 hospitals close since its passage. We've seen premiums go up 80% since its passage. It's been everything but affordable.
I yelled at Mike Johnson last week on our GOP conference call. By the way, I'm missing the call today. It's going on right now. And I hope that Mike Johnson is finally giving a single health care policy because the country deserves it, and it shouldn't be a secret. And I shouldn't have to go into a SCIF to go find our Republican health insurance plan.
Maybe honestly, there is no plan.
You know what? You want to know something? That, I believe, is the truth. There's a lot of ideas. There's a lot of bills, but there's no consensus.
Yeah. What I do know is that there are conversations ongoing between different members in the White House. Trump is not on speed dial for me, but nonetheless, I know others are, and we hope that will result in some direction for Johnson to let something get to the floor.
In order, that was Republican Representatives Jason Smith of Missouri and Marjorie Taylor Greene of Georgia and Democratic Representative Sam Liccardo of California. Joining us now to talk through everything that's happening with health insurance is Catherine Hempstead, Senior Policy Officer for the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, a health-focused philanthropic organization. Catherine, welcome to the 21st Show.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Also with us, Amanda Seitz, healthcare policy reporter for KFF News. Amanda, welcome to you as well.
Yeah, so happy to be here.
And finally, Morgan Winters is the director of Get Covered Illinois. Morgan, welcome to you.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Listeners, you can join us today at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. How worried are you about the affordability of your coverage? Would you pay more or put off or avoid treatment because of cost? And are you concerned your choice for care will become out of network? We've been seeing that happening as well. I should say we also asked members of our texting group about this. We'll be sharing some of their responses during the show. Jesse and Mattoon, for example, said, as an adult, I've never been able to afford medical insurance. I can only imagine the range of issues I have halfway through my 30s and live life the way I did. It's incongruous to me that we have billions running the world and one health event will destroy everything a majority of us have sacrificed so much for. Throw the American people some crumbs and renew the subsidies. Thanks for that message, Jesse. Again, if you want to join us, 800-222-9455. All right, Catherine Hempstead, Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, I'm going to start with you. Can you maybe expound on what I mentioned in the introduction there and just talk about what exactly is up for debate right now around Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act?
Sure, yeah. I think the sort of tip of the spear or the issue that's galvanizing a lot of this conversation is the question of whether or not Congress is going to act to extend the enhanced premium tax credits, which were enacted during the pandemic, as you mentioned, and are slated to expire at the end of 2025. So, you know, after the big One Big Beautiful Bill Act, which extended a whole lot of other tax credits, this one was not included, and there's been a lot of discussion and advocacy for Congress to do so. And what's at stake is the cost that people that are in the Affordable Care Act, what they'll have to pay for their premiums. Is the expanding these tax credits really made a big difference, both in terms of who's eligible for tax credits and how large the tax credits are, and the result of creating this expansion was that enrollment increased a lot in the individual market because more people found the plans affordable. So by taking this expansion away, there's, you know, the great apprehension that millions of people, CBO and the Urban Institute have estimated something between 4 and 5 million people will will drop their coverage, will become uninsured as a result of these changes, and even a greater number will actually leave the individual market. Some people will find coverage elsewhere, but the majority will become uninsured. So, you know, it's a pretty cataclysmic event, and that's why it's commanded so much attention.
To the extent you can generalize, what sort of income level or lack of income level are we talking about when we're talking about people getting their insurance in this way, you know, with that had been using these subsidies?
Sure. Well, there's a really interesting thing about income that is a big part of this expansion. I mean, people that use the individual market can really be of any income, although people with incomes below 100 FPL are not allowed to use it. And people in states that expanded Medicaid that have incomes between 100 and 138% of FPL go to Medicaid instead.
But that's the federal poverty level for people.
But one of the important things that is really something people are talking about a lot with the expansion of the tax credits is the decision to eliminate something that was called the subsidy cliff, quote unquote, which was in the sort of original version of the ACA. If someone's income exceeded 400% of the federal poverty level, which is really not that much, it's something like $62,000-ish for a single person, they would become ineligible for any tax credits. So for people in that income, and there you see a lot of maybe people that are early retirees that are waiting to you know, be eligible for Medicare, or people that have a small business, or you know, people that have some income but they're by no means wealthy. These were people that were being asked to pay the full price of premiums, which, you know, could easily be, you know, $800, $900 a month, you know, if you're old, for decent coverage. And most people just absolutely couldn't afford that. So one of the things that is really important about the enhanced premium tax credits is the change is that it eliminated that subsidy cliff, so that there was a, you know, a capped percent of income that you know, people could pay, and that really increased affordability a lot for people in that income range, and for lower income people too. That the change made the tax credits more generous for everybody. But there's been a lot of discussion about how, you know, this is rewarding millionaires, or this is, you know, they're these very, very wealthy people that are getting these government tax credits. But it's really pretty inaccurate, because in the absence of making that change, people are now going to be asked to pay, in some cases, something like 20% of their income for insurance premiums, which is really not feasible for a lot of people. And additionally, the tax credit sort of phases out as your income grows. So I think this has been sort of falsely portrayed as a boondoggle, but it's going to have some really significant impacts on older people, especially in states where healthcare costs are high, which is a lot of rural states.
Morgan Winters, I want to bring you into the conversation now. You're, again, director of Get Covered Illinois. And later on in the program, we'll talk, you know, sort of logistically how it actually works from an individual perspective. But big picture, how have you sort of navigated the uncertainty and these changes at the federal level?
Yeah, we're doing a bunch of different stuff to make sure we're raising public awareness about what's going on, particularly in the context of rising costs. And to do that, the big picture here is that we want folks to come in to getcoveredillinois.gov and compare the plans that are available to them. We're seeing about a 78% increase in net premiums for folks in their renewal plan. In other words, the plan that we have renewed them into from 2025 into the 2026 coverage year. So that's creating some really for families. But what we also found is that there's a lot more affordable options available to families. And part of that is because we did some preliminary work in preparation of the chance that these enhanced subsidies would not be extended back in 2023. We did we created a mechanism in rule that directs carriers to rate their silver plans in such a way that we increase tax credits. It's called silver loading, and it's where carriers price in the cost of cost sharing reductions, which are one of the subsidies that are available under the Affordable Care Act, and also make some assumptions around induced utilization. In other words, people are going to use those those benefits more. And so what that does is it increases the cost of silver plans, which are what the tax credits are based on. And so we've rolled that out newly this year. And the outcome of that policy is that silver plans are more expensive in Illinois, but also tax credits are considerably higher than they otherwise would be. Now, they're not as high as they would be with the enhanced premium tax credits, but we've been able to offset some of that loss if Congress fails to act via this silver loading policy. And so what that has done is made bronze plans and gold plans significantly more affordable for Illinois residents relative to those silver plans. And so we're actually seeing gold plans, which this is a bit of a shock when people realize this, but we're seeing that gold plans in Illinois are actually 30% lower in cost than they were last year. So we're really pushing the message that there are options. Now, of course, the other thing that we're doing is preparing for if Congress does act. And like other state-based marketplaces across the country, we're going to be really focused on getting those savings into the pockets of the people we serve if the enhanced subsidies are extended. And what that looks like is kind of a threefold approach, which is implementation. Obviously, a change like this is going to require some technology changes to our eligibility and enrollment platform, which we've been planning for, you know, over a year so that we can do that swiftly and get those tax credits available to people just as soon as Congress acts. Communication is the other big piece of this, which is this is going to be confusing, particularly given that this is happening likely end of this year, early next year, in other words, almost outside of open enrollment. And so we want to make sure that folks understand the implications to cost. We want them to come in and compare their options with the new tax credits when they become available. And finally, we want to make sure that we're ensuring access to folks. And so what that'll look like is likely an extension to the open enrollment or a special enrollment period to allow folks to act on that change and come in and either newly enroll in coverage or change plans based on the new tax credits that are available if Congress does extend them.
Yeah, so big if there. What is Congress going to do? And that's a great segue into Amanda Seitz, who's a healthcare policy reporter with KFF News. I saw Sahil Kapoor, who covers the Capitol, Capitol Hill for NBC, said after a House Republican meeting this morning, quoted Representative Ralph Norman, the consensus is we need to come up with something. So Amanda Seitz, what are some of the somethings that you've been hearing tossed around as possibilities here?
Well, certainly lawmakers are coming up with something. They're coming up with lots of somethings. They just can't seem to agree on what the something should be. And right now, the most serious Senate bill that's under consideration, still expected to fail, might go to a vote tomorrow, is this plan that would let these tax credits, these extra tax credits, expire. So those would go away and you'd be left with higher premiums. And instead, the government would load these health savings accounts with typically about $1,000 on them. So you could use these accounts to pay for doctor's visits, an ER visit, prescription medications. But you can't pay for premiums with these accounts. And as anyone who stepped foot into a hospital knows, $1,000 is not going to really get you all that far.
So what if you get cancer or something that's yes. really expensive? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and that's why I said it would pay for an ER visit, because that's about as far as you'd get there, if that. And really notable is that the money on these accounts would only be offered to people who are enrolled in catastrophic or bronze plans. So those are plans that come with lower premiums typically, but they have some of the highest out-of-pocket costs. They don't typically cover quite as much. So that bill that's being pushed by some of the top Republicans here on the Hill has the backing of President Trump, it seems. It's still really a non-starter for Democrats whose votes are needed to pass any legislation at this point. Not to mention, I should add that bill also would restrict coverage of abortion for plans purchased on the marketplace, too. Of course, Democrats are still pushing for these extra tax credits to be extended, but we're still seeing a lot of resistance from Republicans, although we've seen some come forward and say that they would like to extend them. Still not enough to get legislation through at this point.
Yeah. Do we have any sense of how, you know, are the health savings accounts, and I should say we need to take a break in about a minute here, but are these sort of dependent on people sort of kicking their own money in as well, or how does that work exactly?
So our understanding is that these would be government funds that are coming and loaded onto these accounts. Again, if you enroll in this thinner coverage, you can also add additional funds to health savings accounts. Typically, that's how they've worked, is that you, as an employee on an employer-sponsored health insurance plan, you put money into these accounts. The government hasn't traditionally loaded these accounts in any way, but you're the one that's putting the money on it to pay for these services, to pay for your healthcare expenses. And that's where Republicans really want to push folks, is to take responsibility, as they say, for their healthcare costs by loading their own dollars onto these accounts.
Yeah. And somewhat old idea too, right? I mean, we can talk about this more after the break, but I mean, this has been bandied around for decades now, or some version of this anyway. All right. We do need to take a break. So we're going to continue today's conversation. We're focusing our program on what's happening with health insurance, particularly with regard to the end of the subsidies for the Affordable Care Act, slated to end this year. We're talking about that with Amanda Seitz with KFF News, Morgan Winters, director of Get Covered Illinois, and Catherine Hempstead with the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. More to come. This is The 21st Show. It's The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking about the ongoing debate in Congress over whether to extend Affordable Care Act's enhanced tax credits, which were implemented during the pandemic, or to do something entirely different on healthcare affordability. But the end of those tax credits mean premiums for everyone could go up quite a lot, including those on employer-based health plans. We'll get into why shortly here. But it certainly is going to affect those who use the Affordable Care Act to get health insurance for themselves or their small businesses. We're talking about this with Amanda Seitz, healthcare policy reporter for KFF News, and Catherine Hempstead, senior policy officer for the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, and Morgan Winters, director of Get Covered Illinois. You can join us today, 800-222-9455. We also heard from people in our texting group. Amy in Wakanda said, man, we are, can I say this on the radio? We're screwed. I'm screwed. I'm probably going to try to go without insurance for the next year. How am I supposed to pay a third or more of mine and my spouse's income just for health insurance? Not even for health care, for health insurance. This is insanity. No other country does this. None. This is stupid. Thank you for your passionate message, Amy, and I'm sorry to hear the choices you're having to face. If you want to share your experience, let us know. 800-222-9455 is the number. 800-222-9455. All right, Catherine, what are some of the stakes here, right? What could be the effects of cuts to the enhanced Affordable Care Act tax credits, you know, if they expire as scheduled at the end of the year?
Well, I mean, I think the biggest negative, of course, is that a lot of people are going to become uninsured, you know, and that's numbered in the millions. And a lot of other people are going to buy down. Now, I think Illinois has done a really nice adjustment with their silver loading so that the option of having a gold plan is more realistic there than in a lot of other places. A lot of other states haven't done this. We've put out stuff showing how difficult it is to find a bronze plan under $50 a month for like a 250 FPL 40-year-old in lots of healthcare.gov states. So that low-cost bronze plan is hard to find. And so when people do buy down, either they'll buy down or have no coverage. When people buy down, you have to worry about more financial exposure. You have to worry about people maybe not getting the care they need because they don't want to have to pay it. Some bronze plans have, a maximum out of pocket that could be $11,000, a deductible could be $7,000, could be more. So you'll see people skipping care and unfortunately acquiring debt, which is already a problem, you know, even with our employer health system, a lot of people have debt. So I think, you know, uninsurance, underinsurance, these are the big risks. And you teed up before, there's a ripple effect. If a lot of people lose coverage, that is, you know, it's terrible for them, but it's a big financial hit for the health system, because then they're not showing up and paying for care. And maybe they're coming and trying to get care in an emergency situation and they can't pay for it. So that turns into charity care. So this is, you know, a big stress for provider systems. And, you know, we have to remember that another big federal policy is the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, which implemented federal work requirements in Medicaid, which is something that's going to, you know, come online next year. And that's anticipated to further coverage loss. So there's kind of a knock-on effect where we really, you know, lose a lot of covered lives. And that puts enormous financial stress on providers. And in turn, that leads them to try to raise prices in the employer market, which is still where the majority of Americans are. And people may find that hospitals are laying people off. They're closing. They're not offering as many services. So I think access to care and the cost of care will impact the employer market.
And yeah, okay, so that's how it affects people on employer insurance. You know, one of the other things we've been seeing out there are plans sort of exiting states altogether or sort of folding up shop. I've also seen healthcare providers, a friend of mine's dentist is going completely out of network so that they basically, I think, essentially don't have to deal with as much insurance or the lower reimbursement rates. Is that something you're seeing nationwide as well?
Well, there have been some exits from the Affordable Care Act marketplace. Illinois actually had a few. It's been fairly modest, but I think there's a good anticipation that it could get a lot worse for 2027 if we never restore any of these enhanced tax credits. And we're also seeing, I mean, I'd like to just back up and say, in addition to these sort of policy hits that we're doing to healthcare, there's some underlying trends that's pretty adverse. Like, we've seen increased prices for all kinds of healthcare services, and we've also seen an increase in utilization. So across the board, insurers are, you know, kind of sweating and having difficulty, like making decent margins. So something you're seeing, for example, in Medicare Advantage is a lot of insurers are, you know, exiting markets, or they're in the market, but they're kind of trying to not have people enroll in their plans, if you can believe it, and taking down their websites, not paying brokers commissions, and doing things to sort of avoid customers or certain kinds of customers because they're worried they're going to end up losing money on the business. So I think there is some cost pressure that is a little bit separate from some of these policy-driven problems, but I think the combination of the two obviously is going to just intensify the impact, you know, in the years to come if we don't take some steps.
All right, let's go to the phones at 800-222-9455. We have Paul on the line from Urbana. Paul, thanks for calling in.
Yeah, thank you for taking the call. I sort of just wanted to pull back a little bit from this whole argument. I wanted to point out that the Affordable Care Act is modeled on a plan that came from the Heritage Foundation and was implemented first by Romney in Massachusetts. And when you hear the speaker complaining about how we're subsidizing insurance companies, I don't understand why at least some Democrats are not saying, let's do Medicare for all. Obviously, it won't pass now, but rhetorically, it would offer a completely different frame of the conversation. And we would be like other countries in the world that have health care for all and don't have bankruptcies from people not being able to pay their health insurance. I'm getting apoplectic, so I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for that, Paul. You know, that's a sentiment we heard from some other listeners in our texting group. Ryan in Champaign said universal health care. Any other options a scam? Christopher in Brimfield says it's terribly expensive. The only real answer is a simplest answer, universal care for everyone, get rid of insurance. And then somebody else who asked to stay anonymous again said, I believe our government should provide universal health care. I'm incredibly lucky to work for a national nonprofit that cares about its employees. While my health plan is increasing next year, my organization pays 90% of the premium for me and my domestic partner. He works in food service where health benefits are non-existent. And this person says, I have a chronic health condition that without insurance would cost upwards of $200,000 annually to manage. If I were in a different position, I could face difficult decisions about paying the mortgage or prolonging the deterioration of my health. No one should have to do that. Healthcare is a human right. I guess, Amanda, I'm going to come back to you. Do you hear, I mean, the sort of Bernie Sanders, Medicare for all, it really seems to have left the conversation at this point, yeah?
Well, certainly, actually, Senator Sanders pointed that out last week at a meeting on the Hill discussed to his bipartisan colleagues, saying, sign up for my plan if you're unhappy with sending money to insurers. But you're right that we're not seeing any really momentum behind that idea beyond Senator Sanders, who has long been a proponent of that Medicare for All. So I don't think that we'll see a lot of movement on that. And there is a certain irony here in the fact that Democrats have been scared to bring up this idea, in part because Republicans attacked them for wanting to destroy an entire industry and put people out of work on the premise of doing away with insurers. So there's still a lot of resistance to having that conversation.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Brian is calling from Chatham on line two. Brian, thank you for calling in.
Hi. I remember 46 years ago as a freshman in college, I was diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. And I was sitting in a hospital at Carl Clinic in Champaign, Urbana. And I remember somebody in a white shirt and a tie coming in and talked to my mom and I and explained to us that your prognosis looks good. We'll consider you in remission if everything goes well. Within 5 years, you'll be considered cured in 10, but you'll always have difficulty getting health insurance. So my recommendation is that you work for a large organization. And I still remember the order he said it in, like the auto industry or government. So I'm not sure what you've chosen as a major or what you plan for a career, but that's my recommendation. And here we are 46 years later, still talking about health insurance and dependency on being provided by an employer to provide good health insurance.
Yeah, that's a great point. Thank you for calling in, Brian. I appreciate you sharing that story. Morgan, that is maybe one of the bright spots, pre-existing conditions not the sort of concern that they once were in getting health coverage.
That's right, Brian. In a lot of states, Illinois included, have enshrined protections for pre-existing conditions into our state insurance statute as well. So we've really doubled down on some of those protections under the Affordable Care Act. We've also got coverage for the 10 essential health benefits under the ACA, which include preventative services at no cost and a whole host of other really important benefits. And likewise, Illinois has been sure to put those on the books in our insurance law. So we're double protected for our residents.
One more call. Terry is calling from Melbourne, Florida. Terry, thanks for calling long distance.
Yes, this is kind of a historical discussion here on our part, but I thought I'd mention maybe somebody could make use of this, but this was way back around 2015, 16, somewhere in there. My wife was on Obamacare. She was still 6 years away from Medicare age. And after a year or two, the Obamacare became too unaffordable for us. And so our alternative was to get a catastrophic policy that would not pay us a nickel until we had spent $7,000 out of pocket. And our reasoning was, well, at least we won't go bankrupt. We'll pay the out of pocket and it'll cover the rest. Now, that was never tested because her health was good. And she did, in fact, about 6 years ago, she made it to Medicare age. And now we've relaxed about it all. But boy, I want to tell you, all those questions were very anxiety producing at the time.
Terry, thanks for sharing that. I appreciate it. Morgan, I guess that speaks to the variety of people and situations who seek out coverage through the Affordable Care Act marketplace.
Yeah, that's right. And folks who are looking for lower cost options certainly can look at catastrophic coverage. In fact, HHS at the federal level relaxed some of the qualifications for catastrophic coverage through the marketplace, so more people can qualify. It's important to remember two things about catastrophic coverage. First, it's not comprehensive, and so it's going to have very high out-of-pocket costs, and it's not going to cover everything that folks necessarily need. And you also can't apply tax credits to catastrophic coverage. And so in some cases, your monthly premium will actually be higher for a catastrophic plan than it will be for a lower cost comprehensive plan. So typically, a good place to start if you're worried about your monthly premium is with bronze coverage, where you can apply those tax credits, but certainly catastrophic can be a good option for some families, particularly if they're not high utilizers.
Just a few minutes left in our time in this part of the program anyway. And Catherine, I want to go sort of bigger picture here, right? I mean, we've heard from people who say they might consider sort of skipping out on their health insurance coverage. We also got a different sort of message from Lloyd in Danville, Illinois, who says, regardless of cost, if I need health care at my age, I'm going to get what's available. If I owe and can't pay, I simply won't pay. Wealthy stakeholders are price gouging everywhere. Congress must act. I wonder what you think of that. Maybe that speaks to some of the more systemic sort of cost increases that you were talking about earlier throughout the healthcare system.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that all insurance is important. All lines of insurance are really important to protect people from financial exposure, you know, but health insurance is, you know, kind of insurance on steroids, because it's not just about money, you know, it's really sort of about your life. So if you really need care, and that care is necessary to keep you, you know, functioning and productive and happy, or maybe to keep you alive, I mean, people are going to get the care they need if they possibly can. And, you know, unfortunately, we know that when people don't have insurance, you know, there's a big effect on mortality, because people won't always get that care, or they'll seek care and it's too late to treat things. So I completely get the intensity that you know, people's demand for access to healthcare services, because they're truly life saving. So it's not just about the money. But I mean, just stepping back, I think that we really may be at a kind of inflection point now, where, you know, from many places, people are sort of criticizing the system that we have as being too expensive, too complex, too much sort of administrative dead weight, navigating, turning between different segments of our coverage system, no part really serving people that well. And I think when you poll people, you really see bipartisan agreement on the need for some really significant change. And the coverage in the Affordable Care Act marketplace is, as Morgan said, it's good coverage. It's just like employer coverage, and it's really no more expensive, despite the, you know, some of the sort of slanderous comments that people sometimes make about the coverage. It covers the right things. You know, the problem is that in most employer settings, the employer share of the premium is pretty large. So people are paying more like a quarter of the premium. And in the ACA marketplace, you're really counting on those tax credits to do something for you. And, you know, if it doesn't do enough, you really can't afford it. But it's good coverage, and it's you know, the fact that it's community rated and it accounts for people with pre-existing conditions is super important. And it filled a gap that was just, you know, a yawning gap in our system for people that didn't get coverage from an employer and didn't qualify for Medicare or Medicaid. All that being said, I think there is a desire to really think about ways to make our system simpler, more universal, and more affordable. And I think we're at a bit of an inflection point now.
We will certainly keep an eye on that and see what happens. Catherine Hempstead is Senior Policy Officer for the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. Amanda Seitz is Healthcare Policy Reporter for KFF News. Thank you so much for being with us today on the 21st show. Morgan Winters is going to stick around, Director of Get Covered Illinois. We'll have more on specifically how to navigate the Illinois marketplace and what's happening here after a break. This is the 21st show.
Support for the 21st show comes from the Des Moines Art Center, located in Iowa's capital city, featuring works by regional, national, and international artists of the 20th and 21st centuries. Details are at DesMoinesArtCenter.org.